Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host Mark Packham, joined this evening by Joe Branton.
Hi, how's
That's
it going?
It's
that
just,
is it. It's
just a two-header.
Oh, well, it's the two best ones.
Yeah, it's going to be a weird one this evening because no Matty, who's off doing a thing. Oh, he's at a Roland event, isn't he?
Yeah,
doing Roland stuff. And Jay's off in the land of the United States of America doing holiday stuff. Although he said he might be in the chat this evening. So
he's around. He's not going to be in the chat, is he? We're still in his flat, though.
We are still here. We're using this as our set, I guess, for the moment.
How did you get in?
Just broke in. He doesn't know we're here, so it's fine. Sweet. It's fine. So if you're joining us live on amply.fi/guitar nerds this evening, you can get involved in the show. Join in on the live chat. We're going to need it this evening because only is no one here. There's not a huge amount of news.
Oh, what are you talking about, man? There's loads. I know you said this earlier, and I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. There is literally loads of news to talk about.
There is some,
and then there's a really cool band of the week, and then there's like loads of group questions. There's loads going on.
It's
going
to be an action-packed show. I think it's going to be good. But do join in amply.fi/guitar nerds. You can join us live every Tuesday where we do this and submit questions. And if you're watching this evening, do join us. So, Joe Branton, how have you been this week?
Yeah, all good. Yeah, actually, it's a hectic week at the moment. What with, there was, of course, I mean, this is going to cross over into what we'll talk about in our news a bit, but Roland had a massive global announcement this week.
Yeah, it was huge.
Yeah, and for sort of, from my job role's perspective, that meant like a lot of work setting things up.
Writing about keyboards and stuff that you have absolutely no idea about,
mate. It was the drum racks for their electric drum kits that cost $6,000 that I was really enjoying.
Wait, just the rack is $6,000?
Oh no, I think the drum kit. To be honest, I don't know.
Wasn't there a $20,000 drum kit announced?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, exactly. Wow. It was mental. I'm sure it's very, very good. I just have zero interest in electronic drum kits. Even less interest in writing blog articles on electronic drum kits.
I'm sure they were enthusiastic and very professional.
Thanks, man.
Because you're that kind of guy.
I absolutely am.
There was lots of stuff, I suppose, this week. Apart from the guitar stuff, did anything stand out to you?
apart from the guitar stuff, I'm struggling to remember stuff that happened that wasn't a guitar thing.
The TR-09, is that right?
Yeah, that's true. I haven't actually had a chance to sort of check out a lot of the synthy stuff yet, just because, to be honest, the guitar stuff was so cool that it's been taking up a lot of my time. But yeah, there are some interesting other bits. Cool that they've done like basically a Bassbot copy.
Yes.
And done it in a...
Well, the Bassbot is a copy of their original box, isn't it?
So, but...
They've done an official reissue, basically,
and it's a module for the
Ira.
Is it Ira? No, isn't it a module for the what are they called? The things that are modular.
Oh yeah, that thing that's modular. Yeah.
I think we should not.
Before we whatever, Matt will come back next week.
Like I said, I only cared about the guitar stuff.
Yeah.
Boutique.
Oh yeah, the boutique.
It's a modular for the boutique.
Yeah, one of them. One of them. So worth mentioning, actually, by the way, talking about next week. No one's here except for me. So yeah. I'm going to do the main episode on my own, which should be fun.
No,
so,
it's going to be fine. Get some guests.
Yeah, get your questions submitted to Facebook for next week, because I will need them. And then Matty's going to do the Patreon episode on his own, and he's going to do an audio like walking tour through his pedal board.
Oh, that's cool.
So I think he's going to talk about each pedal, and actually, for the first time ever, we're going to have some guitar playing on the Patreon episode.
Whoa,
so yeah, really? patreon.com/guitar nerds, and you will get that next week.
Do you know what's weird is... in all the time we've been doing this, which is what, 3 years? 3 years?
In total, nearly 4 years, yeah, I think.
4 years.
Three and a half
it's
years.
It's never happened. This
yes.
happened once.
It had,
it?
Yeah, Matt did a podcast on his own.
On his own. This is only the second time. That's pretty good, isn't
it's
it?
It's because I never go on holiday. I'm always
Where
about
are
the guitar
you
nerds.
Next week?
No, I'm around next week.
Oh, yeah, you're around. Oh, that's right. It's me that's not here.
Matt can't make it for the main episode, so I think the Patreon stuff is pre-recorded, so he's going to do that at some point this week.
Yeah.
And, yeah, we'll do the... I'll do the live episode on my Todd from my house.
Cool.
Just with the guys and girls from Amplify.
Oh, no, you should get some guests.
Maybe, but then I've got to invite them around to my house.
Yeah,
or on Skype. I quite fancy the challenge.
No, okay, no, fair enough. That's
I
cool.
might even take calls. If I can work it out, I might take calls, Skype calls.
All right, I'll try and tune in.
Okay, we'll see.
I'll be in Ireland.
Okay.
I assume they have internet over there.
Playing bass or something?
Yeah, I'm going on an Irish tour.
Okay. Good. Where can people catch
and a
you?
A bit of Northern Ireland. I don't know, like
around
the bits. What are the main bits?
Dublin. Yeah,
Dublin. We're playing there. Galway.
Yeah,
that's
I played at the Roisin Dub.
At the Roisin Dub. Yeah,
yeah,
that's right.
It's
yeah,
good.
Is it good?
Yeah,
everyone's banging on about us playing that one.
Jay and I got kicked out of there after the gig finished because there was a DJ playing. We were having such a good time that when the DJ finished, we just carried on singing very loudly and getting everyone else who was still in the club to sing and like doing a kind of a cappella DJ set.
Oh, nice.
And yeah, we just sort of wouldn't leave and neither would anyone else. So everyone got booted out.
Oh.
It was good.
Right. Sounds good. I've heard it's very
good.
Good
bar. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, yeah.
It's good. Anyway, we've been waffling on for
we
quite
have
a
been
while.
Waffling. Oh, I've been asked on the Amplify if I can remind Seb of the era of short scale bass that I'm looking for. There isn't an era as such. I'm just looking for a Les Paul Junior short scale. Has to be glue neck. Has to be lacquered. Has to be black.
Oh yeah, I mean that's, not picky at all.
Yeah, that's it. So I don't mind. Don't mind when. But yeah, there it is. Right. Yeah. Should we move on and do some?
We should do some news.
Yeah,
I
let's
think.
Let's do some news.
Indeed. I knew this podcast is going to be weird format wise.
Well, I'm trying to look at the format. Read the Amplify.
Well, let's go.
I've
anyway,
got a lot of tasks.
Lots of news this
you.
Week, as we've already mentioned. First up, Boss with a few new products: the Boss GT1 and the Katana amplifiers.
Hmm. So this all came. So Boss, as we said, Boss did a global announcement. So it was an announcement that went out at the same time everywhere around the world.
And this was the 32 products. Or
31.
Yeah, 31
yeah, products. Which was madness. And they did it all on Tokyo time, which was great. It would have been nice if they'd have listed UK time somewhere there, but the closest we had was German time. They had a list of all the time zones
okay.
and just missed the UK off.
Yeah, no need.
Germany was an hour out. Of course, unfortunately, Canada misunderstood that everything was on Tokyo time and launched everything early.
Really?
So it was all quite fun. But
right. I didn't realise that because we, we I think had to post the news story in the middle of the night. So
right, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I had to get up at 3 a.m. and make all the products live on the website because Roland wouldn't let us do it before. But
yeah that
fine.
Makes sense.
Yeah, it was a global launch.
That is the nature of an embargo.
Yes, I know. But yeah, they released some super cool stuff. So we got I think we should talk about the amps first.
Okay.
So they released a whole new range of amps. So up until now, Boss and Roland, I guess, have had the they've had the very successful Blues Cube, the extremely successful Blues Cube Hot.
The out of stock Blues Cube Hot everywhere,
yeah.
basically.
Yeah, exactly. Which was great because they did it in two finishes. They did it in blonde, they did it in black. It was great competition for sort of Fender Blues Juniors,
yeah.
and it kind of followed It followed this sort of style that people are going through at the moment of making solid state amplifiers that sound like valve amplifiers, and I thought they did a brilliant job. Brilliant amps. And of course they've also recently reissued the Jazz Chorus.
Mm-hmm.
So we got that, so they're really sort of firing on all cylinders.
They did a small one, didn't they, as well, the 40. So they've been doing, you know, for a long time. All I can remember Roland and Boss doing were the Jazz Chorus reissue, the JC120, and the Cubes, and that was it. And they didn't do anything else for a long, long time. Whereas now, you're sport for choice, really.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a lot out there.
Adding to that, they've got a new series with like four or five different models within it, and it is the it's the Boss Katana series. So Katana, the logo is similar to the Wazacraft logo. They've sort of gone for the kanji.
Is it not the kanji for katana?
Yes, yeah, okay. That's what I meant. But they've gone for a kanji, the same as they did with Wazacraft, which is really cool. And this series essentially is to replace the Cube, or it's certainly a very, very similar in setup. But
really, they're not getting rid of the Blues Cubes and stuff.
Not the Blues Cube, just the ordinary Cube.
Okay,
I assume it's to replace those, because a lot of the options are very similar, but they've made this into a more amp-like package, so it's not shaped like a cube like the
taking inspiration from the Waza amp as well, aren't they, in terms of tones and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a simple sort of looking amp. It's black. It kind of looks a bit like Blackstar. It's got that sort of modern simplicity to it, and they've released it in kind of a range of things, and I think they've nailed it with the how they've put it out. They've released it as you can get it in its largest format in a 212 100 watt version.
Yep.
Now their options along the top are I guess relatively similar to a Cube, in that you have your EQ and then a selection of effects. What crucially makes the Katanas different is that they've also introduced some online software where you can design your patches and download them into the Katana amp, so kind of competing with what TC have done for a while on their bass amps.
Well, and building on what they've been doing with Tone Studio pedals, and you know, we talked about back in the day the ME80, being very, very good, and part of that was the Tone Studio connectivity and building your patches and things like that. And they've started to do that on the amps now as well.
Well, I think offering to sort of do that on these amps, bear in mind these amps are super effectively priced. So like, let's have a look. Like the largest size, which is 100 watt 212, is £409.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Worth mentioning, it's all solid state stuff.
Yeah, of course. Again, yeah.
Using a similar kind of philosophy as a lot of the products they've been doing, but the Waza amp and the Waza pedals and stuff.
Yeah.
Where they've worked really hard on like the sound of components and replacing valves, for example. Same thing with the Blues Cubes.
Yeah, yeah.
Replacing valves with transistors to get similar types of tone.
Yeah.
So
and they do the 100 in a 212 and a 112. Then they do a 50. And they even do a 100 watt head as well.
And now the cool thing about the head, and I didn't really understand this.
Yeah, this is a great idea.
It's got a speaker built into the head.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's not enough. You know, it's not going to. You can't gig it like that.
No,
you know, but it's what a great idea. Like your head that you can gig with, your 100 watt solid state head that you can gig with, you can also double up as a practice amp because it's small enough to be a practice.
Yeah,
I think that's great. I think that's innovation.
I guess it's useful for someone like, well, a lot of people that are in originals bands where they're not necessarily the headliner, and they are, you know, there'll be a cab there already at the gigs, you know, 99% of the time, so that you don't necessarily want a 412 or any sort of cab kicking around your house because you don't need one.
Yeah, yeah.
But obviously, if you do that with most normal guitar heads, you won't be able to use them. Whereas this, you know, it's a small practice amp. You can still use all the same settings, and then you obviously when you go and plug it into a 412, it sounds much, much bigger.
Yeah.
I think it's really cool.
Yeah, they're great. It's £329 for the head as well. I just think these are really on the money. They're exactly what I think the Cube series always should have been, and I just think they're cleaning up amp wise. I think they've got it down at the moment. Great releases, and of course the other big thing that they've come up with is the GT1.
It is, yes. So taking similar technology from the GT100, which is their kind of flagship multi-effects unit, that, you know, doesn't have any of the synth stuff or anything like that. It's just a standard multi-effects. Taking a lot of the tech from that and putting it into a smaller, more affordable box that is gig bag size. I don't know if you've seen the photos, but there's someone with an electric guitar gig bag just slipping the GT1 into the front pocket.
Yeah.
So there's ups and downs to this in that, yes, it's plastic chassis, which, you know, if you're, you know, gigging regularly and you want something more rugged,
it,
obviously...
It does... It looks weird. Like, it does look like an old Korg multi-effects that I have in the bottom of my spares bag.
So. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a kind of, like, 80s vibe to it. It's got those really square buttons on it with the...
Kind of, a bit tronny.
It does look a bit tronny, and it's got underlit buttons as well, so which is pretty, you know, 80s neon-tastic.
I just don't know why they've abandoned, like... the whole look of Boss for this one pedal. It just seems like a mental thing to do. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. It's fine. It's just, and it's a great pedal. I just think the look is like, what are you doing? Like, I know what we should go after, guys. Do you remember those Zoom pedals that they made in the late 90s? Yeah, they were well popular, weren't they?
It does look a bit Zoom. But, you know, with the multi-effects, they always do something a bit different. When, you know, when they change the series, when they've gone from GT4s, 6s and 8s through to the GT... 10 and now the GT100, they all looked quite different, and now the GT1 is going for something else entirely. But you know, it's meant to be small, meant to be portable, which is, you know,
fine. It's a good affordable entry level. It's tons of options, like the, you know, the,
what's the price on them, can you remember?
Like 160 quid, I think.
Okay,
yeah, so it's fine.
Yeah, it's bringing some of that GT flagship tone down to something that's, you know, more like kind of ME80 price point.
Yeah, I think absolutely. It's allowing the sort of tone shaping that that I think is more common in sort of metal and very sort of technically driven music. They're sort of bringing some of the gear that you need to do that into an affordable price point. So,
and MDP tech as well in there, which they're using for the effects specifically. So things like the Terror Echo and stuff like that will have,
which is cool. Those are great pedals.
Yeah, definitely. I quite fancy getting a Terror Echo. Because it's nothing else does that sound. It's really weird.
It sort of came out and then disappeared. Yeah. I feel like a lot happened shortly after it. I think Strymon really had their big thing after the Terror Echo, which is a shame.
I think for
Terror Echo's great.
Boss compact pedals that do something very different have never really worked particularly well. They're always, you know, they're more kind of utilitarian stuff, always does very well. But, you know, things like the Terror Echo, and Dyna Drive and stuff like that that were trying something very different have never really really taken off. So let's do some more news.
Yeah, okay, fine. So other things, we've got some other cool things in news.
We have.
What should we go for?
I tell you what, let's do the Electro-Harmonix, because there is one bit of breaking news that I literally saw on the way over here. Let's do the Electro-Harmonix bass clone chorus pedal.
So you were telling me earlier, this is the first Electro-Harmonix pedal.
I think so. Let us know, if you're listening live, let us know in the comments, but I think this is the first Electro-Harmonix pedal this year, because Mel 9, that was last year, right?
Oh, that's a point, I think.
Maybe
Mel 9 might be this year. Yeah.
But considering the year they had last year, where it was non-stop pedals all the time, it's been very...
This is a weird product. I mean, it's not a weird product. It's a very, very mundane product, which is why it's a weird product. But Electro-Harmonix at the moment, they've been... I mean, we're just coming out of that point in time when they did like the B9, C9, Key9, and then the Mel 9. And then the next thing we get is a chorus... pedal for bass. It's the clone pedal for bass. It was fine. You know,
the small clone was
a perfectly good chorus pedal. But anyway, so what this is, what this has to make it specific for bass, obviously it has a bass and a treble control, so they've introduced some EQ, which I think is always the thing to add when you have a pedal designed for bass. You have to add some EQ on there to give bass players some shaping, otherwise the effects can make things too subby or too trebly without being able to shape again afterwards. Depth and rate, which are the standard controls you get on the small clone, and then they've got a crossover.
They have, marked as the X-over.
Yes, as I put it earlier.
Indeed.
And said, what's that?
What's an X-over? It's a crossover, Joe. So the point of this is that the problem a lot of the time with bass chorus is that people want to do that kind of Peter Hooky kind of Cure top
really
end,
really fast, really intense.
Yeah, chorus. Like, yeah, on the, but only on the high notes, like you know, the treble strings, basically, to give you those kind of bass lead lines that you find on a lot of kind of 80s pop, but also stuff that's really popular now, like the more kind of dream pop stuff and loads of kind of garage rock and surf rock stuff that's coming, or surf pop stuff that's coming out now, has that kind of real 80s bass to it, that warbly lead line. And normally with bass pedals, or normally with bass chorus, I should say, the problem is that you kind of don't want it on the low strings because you want those to be accurate. You don't want that kind of warble.
No, you lose that bit.
So what the crossover is doing is essentially saying, okay, well, when you play the treble strings, the chorus will activate. When you play the bass strings, it won't activate, which I think is a really neat, unique function. And as with everything electronics, you're getting all this in, you know, a package that costs, I don't know how much they're going to be, actually. Probably 50 quid, 60 quid, something like that.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, it's brilliant for that. It's just a bit of a sort of Monday release. It's kind of the sort of thing like, oh, do you realise that wasn't here already? But also, I really hope Electro Harmonix don't go down this route of now doing all of their pedals as bass versions.
They've done all the ideas now. They've, all the ideas are gone. There's no more guitar pedals to ever be made, unfortunately.
Oh, fine.
Sorry. When Electro Harmonix have run out of ideas, that's it.
That's it. That's
the game's
end.
Up.
The end of the world.
I think it's a cool little pedal, and I think particularly at the moment where this
pales,
sort of thing
pales in comparison to the other bit of news that we've got.
Yeah,
the other Effect pedal release.
It does. Another pedal release this week. In fact, just as I was coming over here, I checked my phone, and people were going crazy over this. This is the TC Electronic Mimic Doubler.
Yes.
Which I think they're just calling... Yeah, it's called the Mimic, and it is a doubler. That makes more sense.
Yeah.
So, Joe Branton, what is this?
Okay, so this is a pedal which allows you to double-track what you're playing. It's not the... They're not... That's not revolutionary. People have done it before. There have been a lot of, like, very few millisecond delay pedals that have been released which do that sort of thing, and that is essentially what this is. This is a tight single-repeat delay fractionally after your original. What makes the Mimic Doubler quite unique is you get an option of 1, 2, or 3 overdubs, so you can really thicken up your sound. Now, we watched the video for it, and they're really trying to sell this for sort of metal players. In fact, that's all they focus on, is referencing Dimebag and other people,
Metallica as well,
and stuff
and
like that.
Yeah.
And talking about that, and that's great. But I as we were saying, like, I think the whole idea of like of doubling your guitar is something that predates metal massively. It's hugely applicable to metal, but as you were saying, the Beatles were a great example of it. Thin Lizzy are a great example of it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess with Thin Lizzy, the thing with them is that it's not
it's
harmonies.
Yeah,
and
it's
stuff.
Harmonies. You're probably right. Yeah,
yeah.
It's probably less accurate.
And Beatles is more kind of vocal stuff generally. There's like double tracked a lot of the time. The guitars are as well a bit, but I mean, it's a modern recording technique, isn't it? That you know, when I say modern, I mean, you know, from the Beatles kind of era onwards, is to double up the guitars, you know.
But I think this is useful across the board. Like, this is useful for everyone. I mean, one of the cool things that this does as well is you can stereo out, and then you can choose to pan left and right, or you can choose to pan
One left, one right, and one in the centre.
Yeah.
Or two left and two right.
Yeah.
So what I think it's doing essentially is doing a very short delay, as you were saying, almost like an unnoticeable delay, and then changing the character of that delay somehow. Now, the only control on there really is tightness, which I wonder is if that
the
is
the length of delay.
The length of delay, or maybe it varies the length of the delay, because that would, you know, if you're thinking of a kind of more sloppy guitar player, he's not going to be kind of dead on the beat perfectly each time. So I wonder if you can make it so it seems like you've got a kind of slightly worse guitar player doubling up the lines. I think it's a cool thing.
It's cool.
I think it's a really important part of the recording process is to double up your guitars. Now, I don't know if you do it, Joe, but I've done it a lot. Usually, you know, probably a couple of guitars in the left and a couple of guitars in the right. And this would allow you to recreate that live. Now, whether your audience is going to be able to notice enough.
I think it's a really cool thing. I'm 100% going to be telling my guitarist about it and telling him to get one. They've actually got Misha Mansour all over this pedal as well. He seems to be sort of the guy who they've got promoting it. But I think a cool pedal. I didn't see a price point on it. I imagine it's going to be around 100 quid.
Yeah, that's kind of standard for TC these days. Exactly. 115 quid, something like that.
I think that is a super cool addition, because there are like a few that have been around recently, but currently being made sort of doublers. It's one of those effects that never really caught on despite it being so massively applicable.
Yeah,
I think it's super cool. I think loads of people will get on board.
Yes, I think a cool little effect. And again, TC Electronica kind of, they've done things really well. They've done a really good delay, they've done a great reverb, they've got chorus, they've got all the modulation covered. It's what do they do next? And we've seen an octave divider, and obviously now this is something else, probably using similar technology to the octave divider.
Yep.
So yeah, interesting to see what TC will come up with next. I also am looking forward to hearing this on a clean guitar, because at the moment in their demo video, it's only, you know, heavily distorted guitars.
Yeah, exactly.
I really would want to see what this does with a clean guitar.
Yeah.
And whether, you know, I guess it might give it a kind of 12 stringy type effect. Or maybe it'll be chorusy. I don't know. It'll be interesting to find out. So that's about it for news this week. So shall we move swiftly on
to why don't
Brand
we?
Of the Week.
Brand of the Week.
There we go.
Yeah. So Brand of the Week this week is a really good brand whose website is actually down at the moment. We found when we started podcasting.
Joe was like, okay, so we're doing this brand and show me, because they've got the big thing about them is they've got okay, Joe showed me some pictures of their guitars.
And I was basically going to talk you through an element of their website, and we were going to do it sort of on the podcast. That was going to be the whole thing, but it's fine.
We're doing it live.
Yeah,
we're doing
it
live. But we can't do it live because the website is down, which is disappointing. But we think you can tell me enough about the guitars.
Yeah, I can. Okay. It's just a shame that I couldn't go through it sort of point by point. So the brand of the week this week is a brand called Halo Guitars, who I think might be known by quite a few people, but I really think they're worth a shout out for those who are not aware of them. Halo Guitars are essentially and mainly a custom shop. They do, however, also have a pre-built shop. They make guitars and basses. They have about 40 different body shapes for guitars and about 20 for bass. So huge range. They vary massively from, they have two headless ranges, for example, for guitars, very much in the sort of Strandberg style. And they have everything down to sort of like 335 style things.
Can you put a headless neck on a 335?
I don't think you can.
That's a shame.
One of the things that's really interesting, they do a solid 335.
Okay.
Which I started designing on their thing and gave it a mahogany body and then was like, oh, hold on.
That'd be quite heavy.
I'm not going to be able to lift that.
No.
But okay, so the thing that they have that really makes them great is they have an online builder for their custom shop, and this makes Warmoth look poxy for the amount of specking you can do. You start with the whole guitar for a start, sort of rather than the body and the neck, but you can go through everything. Obviously you can choose left or right, you can choose core wood, you can choose the top wood, you can choose, you know, from colors, from sort of transparents to sparkle finishes to burst to solid colors. You can specify the sides and back being in different finishes. You can choose neck thickness, fret style, neck wood, fretboard wood. You can choose slotted headstocks. You know, loads and loads of different options for headstocks for every model as well. Scale. They also do fan fretted. Anything can be fan fretted on their site. You can choose the construction, so you can have it through, bolt on, or glued neck.
I'm so disappointed the website's down, because we could make a monster.
The choices
right now
are unbelievable. I mean, I went on there and made my band signature guitars and basses, which are both like Les Paul Junior style things. I made myself like a short scale Les Paul Junior in Sunburst with a reverse Telecaster headstock angled back and Rickenbacker trapezoid inlays.
Yeah, I mean, that's ridiculous.
Out of mahogany. And I made a slotted headstock single humbucker, one volume control
Les Paul Junior.
Through black Les Paul Junior. Yeah, for Tim.
Through neck Les Paul Junior.
Oh no, sorry, did I say through neck? Through black.
Through black,
on neck. But yeah, so you can do all that. And here's this is the thing that of course we're gonna say, well, this is the same as what I was talking about last week. These amazing luthiers, but of course if you've got £3,500 to spend. That Les Paul Junior that I specced up is $1,700. The Les Paul Junior basses that I specced up were coming in at 1,400. I managed to spec up a couple of tellies that were coming in at sub 1,000.
Really?
Yeah. And the reason is that these are all assembled in China.
Ah.
Then shipped over to the States where they fit the electronics. Halo are in quite tightly with Bare Knuckle Pickups, and there's actually a second element of this website, which is a Bare Knuckle Pickup custom pickup designer.
Okay.
Where you choose exactly what, everything down to sort of their how they're wound to their finish.
Okay.
And obviously you can then have that put in your guitar. So they go back over to the States where they are then the pickups are fitted and everything else like that, and they ship worldwide as well, which is great. So they essentially manage to, by having decent CNC machines and having a good setup where they've obviously got a strong relationship with the Chinese factory, they're able to make complete, everyone can have their own signature model without spending £3,000. And I mean, I was making strats and then making them carve top and things like that. You can do anything.
It's the classic carve top guitar.
But the options are limitless on this website. Absolutely limitless. Like, you can do, the fact that I could specify that much, I can bevel the edges of the guitars if I want. And you've got you can have binding all over everything, and
I want binding around the pickup. Is that possible?
probably.
I reckon it probably is.
The options on there, it's a real shame that I can't go through it option by option just to tell you how many things you get to change on
what
this.
We'll do one night on an Amplify stream, not the regular stream, because I think this would be boring for the audio audience, but we could do a making a monster. There's a famous YouTube show, Monster Factory, where they take character creators from video games and make the most horrendous things that they can. Maybe we should do that on the Halo Guitars site one night on a live stream, and just make as crazy a guitar as we can with their pretty awesome guitar building tool.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that'd be fun.
Yeah, yeah. We definitely should. But the amount that you can go in depth just makes it so worth it. I am strongly considering getting hold of one.
This might be your only way to get your short scale Les Paul bass.
Yeah, that's the thing. That is the thing.
With the reverse Thunderbird headstock and Rickenbacker inlays.
Oh yeah, it's going to be incredible. Maybe I will. Maybe I'll order one, and then we can sort of see what they're like when they get here. I was reading some reviews on them, and it seems to be, on the whole, very, very good.
Okay.
The negative reviews come from people who I think don't get it. It's like, yes, yeah, it's $1,000 for a Chinese-made guitar. And that seemed to be the problem.
Okay.
Like, people being like, oh, these are, they're just Chinese, they're overpriced. It's like, no, mate, it's a completely customised to you guitar. Yes, it's made in China, but it's completely, it's a one-off. There's no factory line for this.
No, and it's assembled in the States.
Exactly.
And all the electronics are done in the States, and I assume the final setup and stuff is done in the States.
Yeah, the final setup's done there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the problem
is. There is no problem. Most, like 90% of the reviews I read were very good.
Yeah.
I just meant that's the flip side of people being like, because you could easily, like if you wanted to go to town, like for example, one of the example guitars that they give you to start the build from is a through purple burst Telecaster with three Gretsch, gold Gretsch pickups and a Bigsby.
Nice.
With all the like completely abalone binding and whatnot, and that hits around sort of 3,600-3,700.
Wow. Okay.
So you can go to town and spend that much money. Yes, and then maybe then you're spending $4,000 on a Chinese built guitar. But if you're careful with this, you can get something that's just right for you, and for in pounds.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
You can do it for sort of 1,200
Yeah, or like you were saying, pounds. If you're doing tellies and stuff, yeah. basic tellies, under $1,000.
Yep.
So it'd be super interesting. Good.
So kind of, I think, a great option for anyone because there are so many body stuff. So as I said, you can get super modern stuff. They do cool jazz stuff on there. They do Fender copies and they do Gibson copies. So there's something for everyone. I think I would love it if everyone went on to Halo Guitars. Hopefully their website is working again very shortly. I mean, I spent quite a lot of today on that website.
Yeah.
I mean, I showed you all the
You've made quite a few.
But yeah, everyone go on there. All of the Facebook group, go on there, make your guitar, put it on the group, and we'll talk about all the models and sort of what you can do, and yeah. we'll see. Yeah, let's have a look. Let's see what everyone comes up with. We should all make our signature model.
I think that'd be good.
Yeah,
that'd be good.
That is a great idea.
Are you able to submit pictures for the finish?
Oh, I forgot to say yes. Yeah, these are the annoying things that if the website worked, I'd be doing. Yes, you can.
So I can finally make the Michael Bolton Stratocaster. Yeah,
yeah. For $50, you can also you can scan your signature and send it to them, and they'll put it on the headstock.
Yes. Yes. Basically, what I want is a bolt-on neck Stratocaster with a big picture of Michael Bolton's face right across the guitar.
I don't know if that joke is worth the amount of money.
I think it is. I 100% think it is.
Fair enough, fair enough. Good. But yeah, great. I did actually try that, uploading some of my band art onto one of the guitar fans.
So vain.
It's so totally worth
it. Should just upload pictures of old random celebrities like Michael Bolton. Anyway, shall we move on to some questions?
Questions.
We've got a fair few this week. Joe, I'm going to look at some from the Facebook group first.
Yeah, okay.
But do have a look on Amplify. Let people know that they can submit them. If you're watching live, submit your questions now. So, first up, Rex says, "Hey guys, I'm looking for some hand-wound pickups for a P-bass. Preferably not from a big company like Seymour Duncan or EMG. I want to buy British from an independent guitar tech. I know of Fletcher guitar pickups already, but I'm looking for alternatives. I had a bass a while ago and had hand-wound pickups by someone called NSW, and it had his telephone number on it. However, I've lost the number for him, and they were amazing pickups and very cheap." Mm-hmm. Joe Branton, any ideas?
Well, I mean, we've already mentioned them once today, but I think the obvious one to go for is bare-knuckle pickups.
Yes. Now, I don't know if this quite fits the criteria, because I wouldn't say that they're a small independent builder anymore. You know, they build pickups for Fender and they've put some in Gibson and things like that.
But actually, I think this is a common misconception with guitar companies. Just because they're successful doesn't mean that they're a big corporation.
Sure.
It's still one fella. He still hires the students in his village to help wind pickups when he gets too many orders. It's still a really local little UK company that I think are brilliant. I also think no one is doing anything to the quality of Bare Knuckle at the moment. I think he's, you know, become the absolute number one for sort of cool custom shop pickups. And I don't think there's anyone else out there to go for.
It's definitely a benchmark that others are trying to hit, I think, at the moment. It's Bare Knuckle is the one. So, have you heard any of their P-Bass pickups?
Do you know, for me, it's the only place that disappoints me a little bit.
Okay.
Just because...
Because they don't make a quarter pounder, basically.
No, because the choice isn't really there.
Okay.
So I mean,
surely you just want a nice P-Bass pickup.
Yeah. And yeah, I guess that's it, isn't it? It's the same with everything, isn't it? We just get less choice on stuff. They do a really good sort of standard, a vintage bass on a 57 low output reissue, which I think is definitely the thing to go for on a P-Bass, absolutely. They do a high output one, but it's more in line with the Seymour Duncan vintage hot than it is a quarter pounder.
Yeah.
So yeah, great pickups, just not the choice that you get in the guitar world. But as you say, you're probably right, like, what would the choice be?
Well, yeah, you want a low output one and a high output one.
Yeah, that's
and
it.
And if you're a weirdo, you want an active one. But Bare Knuckle are not going to do that because it's weird.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, I mean, I would say Bare Knuckle as well. Like, there are a huge range of builders out there. I'm actually talking to someone at the moment about some custom pickups for the double humbucker Pink Sparkle Strat.
Oh, yeah.
The Halo website.
Yeah, I've
working.
Just been someone on Amplify. Thank you very much. DeJenning. Oh, great name. Yeah, Halo is back up. Everyone go on there now, immediately. I mean, maybe not everyone.
You might crash their website.
But it's absolutely brilliant.
I like how one of their options is body blank, and it's just a square of wood with a neck stuck on it.
I know, that's so good. But you can cut it yourself. But anyway, yeah, the options here are absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah. I think what we'll do is a special Amplify session where we go through and we build some stuff with input from people live. I think that'd be cool. We'll do that.
That's great. Yeah, let's
that
do that.
Purple telly with the gold pickups looks absolutely horrendous.
What are you talking about, mate?
Unbelievable.
Look, matching scratch plate.
So anyway, so I'm talking to someone at the moment about some custom pickups for the double humbucker pink sparkle strat that we've got at the moment. And I'll tell you how that pans out.
I still think it needs to change to one humbucker, right?
No, it's going to be two humbuckers, but call tappable.
Okay.
Or call splittable. Oh. We're going to do some funky stuff with the switching and stuff like that. It's going to be basically the ultimate Guitar Nerds demo guitar. Mm. Give us loads of options and stuff like that. But Rex, to answer your question, bare knuckle every time for me. I think the quality is second to none at the moment.
On the group, they've mentioned Lindy Franklin, Fraylin.
Yes.
As well.
Which have been around for a long time.
Yeah. But bare knuckle.
Yeah. Okay, good. Alex says, thinking of running 12 pedals out of an MXR ISO brick, one by 12 volt, the rest 9 volt. Three of the points will run 2 9-volt pedals. Will this just make it the same as an isolated bank like the T-Rex Fuel Tank Classic, or should it be better? So I think he's saying that he's going to run...
That he's going to have to daisy chain it.
Yeah, daisy chain off a couple of the slots.
Yeah, now, I always daisy chain.
Do you? See, yeah. I don't have any experience in this because I've never had a pedal board big enough where I've needed to. But... interesting to know that it is possible.
Yeah, it's totally possible. Not just possible, it's standard as far as I'm concerned. But the you'll have absolutely no problems. I'm sure there is some science and knowledge that,
don't bring
that
science people into like this podcast.
People like Matt Knight have. I'm sure there's some maths involved in working it out. Obviously you need to check the 9-volt pedals don't have a milliampage draw that's going to be more than the total amount. But I tend to do it by a little bit of a sort of trial and error. So obviously your big draw pedals, you have an isolated input.
Yeah.
But for example, because I'm in a similar situation. I have 13 pedals that I run off of one of the Voodoo Labs 4x4s.
Yeah.
And I daisy chain 6 on one output.
Madman.
Because all the others are high draw. But then I'm like daisy chaining 2 octaves, a drive. I just make sure they're the pedals that obviously aren't going to mess it up.
So low draw
stuff,
basically.
No reverbs, no delays. That's about it, isn't it? Reverbs, delays, things like that.
Yeah, and things that are doing like multi effects or anything like that. So like Line 6 M5, for example, you probably wouldn't put in the wouldn't daisy chain with something else, I guess.
But it is fine. You just have to check. Take everything off the board, plug it all into the MXR, daisy chain a couple of bits, plug it into your amp. If you're getting clean, silent power, then you're onto a winner.
Yeah, it's probably not going to damage anything, is it?
If you're not
drawing enough, basically.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. It should be completely fine.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that kind of solves a problem for me as well, because I need to get an ISO brick to power my board.
You want an ISO brick? I mean, I'm still Voodoo Labs.
Okay. Well, I just think for cost-wise, I'm cheap. Mm-hmm. And I don't have that many pedals.
What's your board?
One of those ones.
What's the board? Is it a pedal train?
Yeah, it's a pedal train.
So, and how are you planning on securing this MXR?
I haven't thought about that.
Well, there you go. Get a Voodoo Labs, and then you can actually secure
it. Yeah, maybe.
Gaffer
tape?
Pedal train do brackets for, like, £6 that you can either Velcro or screw
to the
underside.
Can't I Velcro the power supply?
Yeah, it'll probably fall off.
Yeah, I don't take it out anywhere though, so might be alright.
Fine.
Anyway, do you want to do a question from Amplify? Have we got one there?
No, I haven't checked. Do another one on here first.
Fine. Paul says, I have an old Squire Strat that is a project I relicked and put a great neck on. It's time for pickups. I'll admit I like humbuckers and could happily choose between them, but with single coils, I've got no idea. Is there a good Strat set I should get as an upgrade, or individual pickups that anyone can recommend? So he wants to use single coils on a Strat. What would you recommend, Joe Branton? You're not allowed to say bare knuckles.
Okay, well, I mean, to be honest, I still think like it's such a predictable answer, but I do still think like Seymour Duncan sort of hold the reins on like affordable stuff. Like Benacquers is great if you want to spend £100 on a pickup, but if you want to spend sort of £40, you know, on something that's really good,
yeah,
then I think Seymour Duncan have kind of sort of got everything going for them.
Worth looking at the Seymour Duncan sets, because there is, if you want a classic Strat sound, there is certainly a set for that. I forget the name off the top of my head. Maybe it's even called like the 59 set or something like that, which is just three single coils. If you want something more versatile, there's the Everything Axe set, which I think is a JB Junior, Hot Rails, or no, maybe it's a Cool Rails, and a Duck Bucker, which is the middle pickup, which is the one with like three pole pieces on either side rather than six, so like one pole piece per string,
right?
Which is meant to be used like out of phase. It's like specifically made for the middle
for
pickup.
That weird quacky sound.
It is indeed. So if you want to build a guitar, and I think they're all four pole as far as I remember, so they're all coil tappable or coil splittable, so if you want to build something super versatile, that is a really good set. But I'm going to give the appropriate props to the Fender Fat 50 set.
Oh yeah,
I think
it's pretty standard,
a custom shop set. It doesn't do anything fancy, but it's just a really good 50 style Strat set. Is that still what's coming on all the standard Strats?
Yeah,
American standards.
And then and then what, £100 are they? £120
Yeah, they're like £120 something around that price point.
But it's
point.
The full set, so
it is. It is. And I think all the wiring and stuff you need is in there as well. So yeah, I think the Fender Custom Shop Fat 50s is a really good set. Texas Specials, if you want something a bit hotter. Personally, I prefer the 50s. I think they're a bit more open, a bit brighter. A great set of pickups made in the Fender Custom Shop.
Damn straight.
Indeed. Have you got a question from Amplify?
No, I still haven't checked. I'm answering your questions. I can't read the questions and answer. This is the downside of a twosie.
The two man.
I can't do two things at once. Go on then, do the next question.
Okay,
and you focus on that.
Andy says, I've got a bit of advice needed. I'm about to buy a Gibson Les Paul Studio Faded from 2011. I know it's an entry level, but I'm not interested in going all out just yet. Your thoughts on this model, please. So my thoughts on this are the Les Paul Studio Fadeds are a fantastic guitar. The ones from 2011 are pretty standard spec. You know, there's nothing particularly fancy about them. And if you want a really good entry level Les Paul that's, you know, full size body, and has got a decent finish on there, it's still a nitro finish, it's a thin satin nitro on there, guitar that's going to age well, or will have aged well, then yeah, they're a really, really good guitar. I think in the studio Fadeds as well, you're getting the 490 pickup, so something a little bit hotter. So if you're thinking of metal or some more on the heavy kind of side of rock or blue, you know, a heavy blues, then they're a fantastic guitar to go for. As far as I remember, really good finishes as well. I think they just did the Worn Brown and the Worn Cherry. The Worn Brown you see all the time because the metal guys were really into it. That matte finish brown looked really good on stage. I've seen more than one of those in kind of local metal bands. Hard wearing as well, you know, it's a soft finish on there, but it's not like it's a poly finish that's going to crack and split.
Uh-huh.
It's going to bruise nicely. So if you're looking for a Les Paul for a while, a Studio Faded 2011 is a good shout. Also worth mentioning the 2017 Gibsons that are coming
out. Why aren't we talking about those?
We talked about them last week.
Did we?
Oh yeah.
Was I here?
Oh
yeah, because I was really angry about the bass. But the M2 had not enough information was available on the M2 at the time.
The M2 wasn't announced. We should maybe talk about that next week or in a couple of weeks.
Really?
Because there's been no confirmation on colours and stuff yet. There's one picture.
There's that one picture.
Which has
But that one picture which includes a pink, a sort of greeny yellow.
Yeah, like a slime green.
Oh yes. And then there's sort of red, white. It's blue.
Red, white,
and blue.
And
a black with a torque guard. The white has one of those weird, like, you could get this scratch plate on Aria Pros, sort of, like, blue perloid.
Oh, really?
Or grey perloid.
Oh,
it looks
nice.
Awful. But really excited about that guitar. I mean, have we had a price point confirmed?
No. That's the thing with Gibson.
It's going to be like, it's going to be £500 or less.
With the
I want it.
With the 2017s, we're playing a bit safe on what we say and don't say because we don't know a whole lot, actually. No. Like, even you on the inside don't know a whole lot. So yeah, it's because they've not been officially announced.
No,
it's just manufacturers, retailers have started listing them.
Yes.
So some of the prices have been announced, and some of them haven't.
Yeah,
so
we're sort of in a half and half situation. But I'm really excited about them. I think they're going to be cool. I'm definitely buying one. Left hand options. Right. Let's do something from the.
Let me finish my point.
Oh, sorry.
I was going to say, if you want a new guitar rather than the Les Paul Studio 2011, well, it may be worth hanging on because things like the Les Paul Tribute look very, very good indeed.
Very good indeed.
Gold top, proper covered pickups, but a faded finish, and I don't think it's going to be mega money. It's going to be probably, it's probably going to be less than a studio. So yeah, that be, if you want something that looks more like a traditional Les Paul, then that may be something worth holding out for.
Damn,
so
wait
till the prices get announced will be my my recommendations, unless this is going for a song and it's going soonish, then snap it up.
Yeah,
definitely.
I'm waiting for 2017. I think it's going to be a good year, except for bass.
Let's take a question from Amplify.
So this is less of a question, more an incredible revelation.
Yes.
So it has been pointed out that yes, everyone, it is true. I am still on the lookout for a short scale Les Paul bass. And Seb, thank you very much, has found over at one of my least favourite shops in the world, Bass Direct. They have actually got listed
a fine retailer.
Yeah, whatever. They have actually got a Gibson.
I really like Bass Direct. I think they stock loads of stuff that no one else stocks.
Yeah,
anyway,
I guess someone's got to do it. Yeah. So Bass Direct actually have got in there. Is this in their secondhand X demo section? It's hard to read their absolutely diabolical website, but yeah, I think it's
you're not going to get a deal on this if you
no, it's really good. I really like the PayPal options. Right, it's so they have got a Les Paul, a single cut Les Paul Junior bass in black, two Thunderbird soap bars.
I mean, this is exactly
that
what you've asked for.
Wicked, two Thunderbird soap bars.
What scale length?
So this is the thing, that looks full scale to me.
Yeah, I seem to remember them being full scale.
I think that is full scale. But, to be honest, the big question always was, can I get a short scale into drop C?
Probably not, no.
Why not?
Because it won't work.
Do you think it might?
It won't work.
Maybe.
It won't work.
I prefer the look of short scales. I think they look way cooler.
That's ridiculous.
No, it's not. But, if I got a short scale and I couldn't get it.
Basically,
into
you want something that doesn't exist.
No, it
that's
the exists.
Issue.
Well, this exists.
The perfect
this
base.
Is close. This is really close.
That might be medium scale. You never know.
Mate, this is actually quite good. How much is it?
£699.
Oh, yes, I can see that in that really easy to locate
anyway,
price point on it. It's £699.
It looks very good. It looks great.
It looks really good.
I'm not sure that's not short scale, by the way, just looking at the back of it there.
Really?
Yeah.
If it's short scale, even better.
We'll look
it
up.
It doesn't matter.
Anyway.
It doesn't matter.
I'm glad that you have been...
They're Bartolini pickups. Oh my God, it's even my favourite pickup brand. I didn't even know they did this in the 90s.
Apparently so.
Who knew? Who knew?
Apparently so. Have we got a question there?
That was the question.
Okay, it looks like another one's popped up. Harry says, looking at getting an ES-345, but what exactly does the Veritone do, or should I just go with a 335? So Veritone basically does, I think it adds another component to the circuit. I think the way Veritone works is it adds like a resistor, and you get different levels of Veritone, giving you different tones, essentially, as it suggests.
Yes.
Personally, it's not something I've ever really looked into because I just think, get a 335.
It's just a filter, isn't it? It's just a high
pass,
low pass.
Exactly, yeah. So my advice would be get a 335. The only other thing that 345 gets you is like custom binding, basically. Cause it's like a custom, you know, like a Les Paul custom gives you like the three-ply binding or the nicer binding, basically.
Yeah.
That's what a 345 will get you over a 355. But personally, there's nothing cooler than a Cherry 335.
Yeah, except for a black one. But they
No.
Yeah. Or any colour, actually. Sunburst, yeah.
Marty McFly.
Any colour other than Cherry.
Marty McFly.
But they're still super cool. Definitely a 335.
I mean, actually,
definitely
he's not playing a 335 at that
or
point.
Or a 333. Definitely a 333.
Is that the Tom DeLonge?
Yes.
No.
Yeah.
No.
No. You should definitely get it.
My advice I'm really is up for that. Get a 335. Get a 335.
It's the future.
Anyway, let's do a couple more questions. Maxwell says, one of our own just upgraded from a Line 6 to a Marshall half stack. Oh, he's talking about people in the Facebook group.
Yes.
I saw that. That was a nice upgrade. A thought crossed my mind when I saw that. Did anyone in this group start off with an amp that was not a Line 6? If so, what was it? I fall into this category. My first amp was an Orange Crush 35.
Oh, that's a good first amp.
What was your first amp, Joe Branton?
It was a Tysco Bassman 500.
Okay.
It was a 115-inch 500-watt combo that had two inputs, which came in useful when my band won the entertainment category at the school.
What was this band?
Battle of the Bands. They were called Superheroes Anonymous.
Oh yeah, I remember this.
I remember them. They won. We won the entertainment category.
Which Blink-182 song did you cover?
No, we didn't do a Blink-182. We did an original number, but I did take off my trousers and and jumped on the PA system whilst we were playing. Anyway, we didn't win. Another band won.
Did you have pants on?
Yeah, I had pants on. Okay. But then, that's good. For the finale piece, it's supposed to be the winning band.
I thought you kept taking your trousers off as the finale piece.
Yeah, it was. But they were friends of ours, and so they were like, they were just a two piece guitar and drums. They were like, why don't you guys come on as well, just the guitarist and bass player from our band, and we'll do a 12-bar blues jam.
Right, nice.
And so we did that, but of course we didn't have enough amps because they were sharing the school guitar amp. So me and my guitarist both plugged into the Tysco Bassman 500, probably the best amp I've ever owned.
What a sound, I'm sure that was.
It was absolutely amazing. I loved that amp. I loved that amp right up until it started to go mouldy.
Yep. I've had that before.
Old amps, innit?
Not good times.
What about you?
So my first one was a PV Blazer 158. Or no, a Rage 158.
Oh, yes.
Just the one without reverb, I think. I can't remember which way around it is. Rage and Blazer were the same.
What weird controls did the Rage and the Blazer have?
Oh, nothing exciting. They just had... Oh. Yeah, they just had like a distortion
but
button.
They sounded great.
No,
that
they
the
absolutely
thing.
Did not sound great. It sounded pony.
You're wrong.
My first ever guitar was a PV Raptor my first electric guitar, I should say, was a PV Raptor and a Rage 158, and that came with a secondhand gig bag. It's hard times, basically.
Oh, PV used to dominate that end of the market.
Practice
what is going on there?
Yeah. But
Fender have got it sewn up.
The one that I wanted to talk about was one that you may or may not remember, which my first... I mean, you don't remember my specific one because...
No, I didn't know you.
No, I mean, we're not even really mates now. The chance of us being mates like 20 years ago is probably not...
Slim.
Yeah, slim to none. Yes, the one that you may remember is the Trace Elliot Commando, which is my first ever...
No way. Trace Elliot called an amp Commando.
Commando, yeah.
What was it shaped like?
Thinking about it, and this goes back to you having your pants out at school. They're two amps. So this was the their amps in the bass No Man's Land that were bigger than a practice amp, smaller than a stack.
Wait, was the Commando that amp that didn't have a grill on the front, but instead the carpet went the whole way round except for a little vertical slit?
No, that was... I can't even remember what that was called. Horrible.
They were a little like.
The two amps, and why this relates to you having your pants out on stage.
Yeah.
The Commando and the Boxer.
Oh, nice.
That was
So
that was your two options.
I was either a tidy whities man.
You can either go good to know. Stained tidy whities, I'd imagine. You can either go in your boxers or you could go Commando.
Oh, that was your two options. That is absolutely shocking.
That's going to be the
Trace
name of the
Elliot.
Podcast,
what
Boxers
company.
Or Commando. But yeah, it was a 115 150 watt combo. So again, in that classic bass amp no man's land of not really loud enough to do a gig with, but bigger than a practice amp. So, you know, 14-year-old and 15-year-old kids like I was at the time go in and go, oh, I've been plugging bass into my little guitar practice amp and I want a bigger one. Get this. And then you find out, like, it's basically useless. For doing anything other than, like, practicing at school or playing as a band at school, 150 watts on bass is
pointless. Just go straight up to 300 watts.
So there we go. Yeah, Boxers or Commando.
Yes.
With your Trace Elliot.
Should I do another one from the group?
Let's do one more.
So Dan Basley in the group has said, Gigrid G2. or Boss ESA? We have sort of had this discussion.
We've had this a fair few times, but you know, was it Dan?
Yeah.
Is that right? Dan might be new. I personally like the ES8. It won our Gear of the Year award last year.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of features on there that not many other switching systems are doing. I really like the amp control features on there. You know, you can ping your amp to change channel, and you can do that as part of the patches. It's just a really, really solid unit.
It's not really that comparable to the Grieg G2 anyway, because price wise they are so.
Yeah, they're so very, very different. Yeah.
I agree. Again, I think the Boss introducing the ES8 has made amp switching an actual option for gigging musicians, not just sort of top end musicians. No, not that the gig rig's unaffordable. I think it's very expensive for sort of what it is.
Yeah, you know, they're made in a very different way.
Of course.
And, you know, the ES8. If you want something to be the hub of your setup that will talk to your amp, talk to your pedals, it's easy to program the MIDI. I think the ESA
the ESA is really straightforward, as straightforward as sort of programming.
Oh yeah, easy mate, easy.
A full pedal board can be, but I think they've it's a complete market changing thing, and they are certainly. Like gig rig was not played. Bear in mind, sort of all the music that I'm involved in, all the math bands and all the prog bands that I know were not playing gig rigs. They are all playing ES8s now,
yeah.
though.
Yeah.
And so it's just, yeah, I think 100% the Boss ESA, well deserved winner of Gear of the Year last year.
Definitely. And it was very much when we put it on the list of kind of nominations, it was like. A switcher will never win. How could a switcher win our Gear of the Year? And actually thinking about it, like you say, it's gone to so many people's pedal boards that I think it was deserved.
I think it's probably our first good choice in Gear of the Year.
No.
Because the year before was the Strymon...
Deco. Good pedal.
Great pedal. It hasn't really...
Didn't have that lasting appeal,
no,
I think. Whereas I think ESA would.
Yeah, certainly the Big Sky... And you know the Blue Sky, that they have sort of been the Strymon pedals that everyone remembers.
Yeah, they've lasted. Whereas the Deco, you know, it was a little bit more of a flash in the pan.
Yeah.
The Gear of the Year before that, I don't remember.
Was the Squire Bass 6?
Was the Squire Bass 6?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which again,
good piece
totally
of kit.
Cool, but we all agree, actually, when it came down to it,
we got on the hype train at that point.
Wasn't very good. Like the Pawn Shop that they released, that Fender released, that was great. But yeah, the Squire one.
Yeah, so ESA I think is something that will last.
Yeah,
it kind of depends how the market goes, really. If suddenly everyone decides, oh, I don't want to use single pedals anymore and I want to use Digitech rack gear from the 90s, then it's probably not going to be very good. But
how long do we have till Gear of the Year?
I've been speaking to people about it this week. So, yeah, we've got some new submissions. And,
oh, cool.
But I think we're going to record in November at some point.
We've also got the next round of the quiz coming up soon.
We have. In fact, we should sort that because we should be doing it on episode 75. And I think this is episode 72.
Yeah.
Or so maybe it's episode 73.
Maybe.
So we may not have too much time. But yeah, episode 75, look out for the quiz.
I don't like not being the host in the quiz.
I know, because you have to win.
Because I only know about bass stuff. It's not very difficult. And Jay Cross's last round of questions, which were basically just about bands that only he and you knew about, was really very helpful.
Talking about bass stuff, I think we should probably wrap this up because we're going to go and record a whole Patreon episode.
Yes, we are.
About the world of bass.
Oh, don't tell people what we're doing. No one's going to tune in now.
No one's going to tune in.
We're doing a bass special. Don't tell them that.
We're doing a bass special
on
Patreon.
Some guitar stuff.
Patreon.com/guitar nerds. We're from as little as $5 a month.
That's nothing.
You can. I've just realised I've not sent you the list of Patreon
backers. That's right. I'm going to find it.
Okay, good. From as little as $5 a month, you get an extra half an hour of Guitar Nerds audio content every week. Mm-hmm. This week, we're talking everything basses. We're doing a bass special. From $10 a month, you become one of our exclusive Patreon backers.
What is an exclusive Patreon
and
backer?
They get their name read out on the podcast.
They get their name read out.
Yeah,
that
they do. It's a way
absolutely.
That we fill for time
right,
while
okay.
Joe tries to find the people.
I found it.
Like this.
Angela Merkel, Tony Blair, Carlos Sanchez, Andrew Marco, Mark Cross, J.D. Short, David Carroll, Annie McKenzie, Brad Pitt, Bill Corrigan, Jack Godfrey, Jack Conroy, Will Clare, Scott O'Brien, Matt Quine, David Hasselhoff, Phil Thompson, Laurie Anstis, Moe, Gravett, Colin Addison.
Do them again. Not all of them, just the ones that you muffed around with.
Steve Merkel, Blair Toms, Carlos Mancha. Did I do any others wrong?
You said Brad Pitt instead of Brad Page.
Yes. No. Brad Page called me up and told me he's officially changing his name to Brad Pitt.
Okay, that's fine then. You also added David Hasselhoff. So who did that replace?
True. No, it didn't. It was just an addition.
Okay, fine. He's just welcome anytime.
Yeah.
He's not. Fine. David Hasselhoff is absolutely not welcome anytime. Anyway, if you want to get involved in the conversation, as always, you can go to the Facebook group, facebook.com/guitar nerds. Guitar nerds forum. No, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum. It's very hot in here. It's messing with my brain hole.
Do you want a massage?
We're on Twitter @guitar nerds, on Instagram @guitar nerds. You can go to amply.fi/guitar nerds, where every week you can watch us do this live. Next week, I've absolutely no clue what's
going to happen. Oh, it's going to be amazing. I'm really excited.
Because
I really want to be on it.
It was hard enough this week doing an hour's worth with two people.
Yeah.
Next week, I'm going to try and do it on my own for an hour.
Oh, it's going to be... You need to do call-ins.
I'm going
to
try and organise. If you go to the Facebook group, we'll talk about this more. But do go to amply.fi/guitar nerds and subscribe to the channel, because something next Tuesday at 8:30 UK time is going to happen. And I've no idea what it is yet, but something will happen. You can also watch all our videos on YouTube, youtube.com/guitar nerds videos, and you can follow us.
Just the two of us.
Just follow us.
I'm at Mark and Joe on Twitter. We've got a group.
We're like when someone gives you their email address and it's like Steve and Angela at btinternet.com. It's always a classic. It's Mark and Joe at Guitar Nerds.
Who has group email addresses?
Yeah.
Like, where are you going to get all your like dodgy snuff movies sent?
Well, I mean, I don't ever have to worry about that, but I'm not sure about you.
Good.
The Weatherseed family at fsnet.net.
Christ. Anyway.
Yes, anyway, yeah. We're going to wrap this up.
Yeah, so you can, yeah, Mark, @mark_random,
@Joseph_900. Follow our comrades, Matt Knight @Matt_Knightsy, and Jay Cross @JAYBN1. Here, that tweet that Jay did got 50,000 retweets.
50,000 retweets, and it wasn't even about guitars.
No, a tweet about biscuits. Unbelievable. Amazing. So go and check out Jay's page for that. Thanks for sticking with us this week. It's been a bit of a weird one because we're on our own.
I think we should always do it like this.
Yeah, maybe this is the new format. Tell us how you liked it. Go to the Facebook group, let us know. And you know, if you're watching live, why not drop us a little donation through Amplify as well. Thanks so much, and we'll see you next week.
Farewell.
Bye bye.
Au revoir. Au revoir. Au revoir. Au revoir. Au revoir.
Reservoir.